This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 295, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy listeners like you. The soothing sounds. FanBoy.com, Pick of the Week podcast, episode 295. We're back from San Diego. Woo!
Survived.
Barely.
Woo!
Also woo.
My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Woo.
And Ron Richards.
Woo!
We are at FanBoy.com. We like comics, we read comics, and we can read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one, writes about the website, talks about the podcast, along with other various topics of interest, emails, voicemails, all kinds of fun things. So before we get to the show, a reminder and a warning. This is a review show, so we'll be talking about the books of the week. There'll be spoilers, so pause the show and come back if you haven't read your books yet. You'll be happier. I'm talking fast because we got a lot of books. Big week, and Ron...
Hold on. I got to finish reading. Wait.
Okay. Ron, you were the sorry bastard that had the pick on this week.
I was a sorry bastard to get the pick this week. Oh, man. I had like 23 books, including, I don't think we're mentioning here, but The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the new one, the 1969 one, which I haven't even read yet.
I haven't even read it yet.
Because I don't count that as an
issue.
It's
like a mini trade.
Yeah, it's a mini trade, yeah. So I'm sure
it's just a time.
I'm sure we'll talk about it later on. But,
it took them 3 years to come out. You shouldn't have to mainline it.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to enjoy it, you know, so I'm gonna bring it on the plane tonight. That's my plan. But anyway, yeah, so I had like 23 books, and... It was a lot of stuff came out from like a lot of different publishers, which is pretty cool. It was a good mix of Marvel and DC and Image and IDW and stuff like that. But ultimately, when it came down to it, it was one of those things where you know me, I go with the gut, I go with the heart, and Venom number 5 just was powerful stuff. So if you're not familiar with Venom, written by Rick Remender, and they're trading off art duties between Tony Moore and Tom Fowler, and this issue actually was the first time where both artists were on the same issue. We got a 6-page action sequence by Tony Moore that opened up the issue, and then the rest of the book, the remaining have 13 or however many pages, were by Tom Fowler. So it was nice to kind of see both artists, you know, do their thing on the book. And if you haven't picked up Venom yet, if you haven't checked it out, this issue serves as a perfect jumping on point, I thought, because it's a single one and done issue. And a storyline had just finished. Unfortunately, it's going to tie into the whole Spider Island thing. And I say unfortunately because
perfect dropping point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we'll see. I don't know. But
I'm leaving you behind.
hopefully not too poorly, it was interesting because when we talked to Rick Remender when Venom was launching, you know, I talked to him, you know, in person. I think it was at WonderCon, and then also we talked to him on one of those Marvel press conferences, and he kept on reiterating the fact that, you know, this, you know, Venom is Flash Thompson, who was, you know, we know from Spider-Man in the Venom costume, but the story isn't about Venom eating brains and everything. It's about Flash, and it's about Flash as a person, and Flash dealing with his anger issues and his previous alcoholism and dealing with the fact that he doesn't have any legs from losing him in the war and being in the army and the sense of duty and patriotism. And in this particular case, whereas Remender's working on the character, like this is truly a character piece, which is an interesting kind of difference from Uncanny X-Force, which is a team book, which he's working on. It's a different dynamic. We're going to talk about that a bit later. But, you know, he kept on stressing that Venom would be about the character of Flash, the character. And no issue, I don't think, has come that across as much as this one. In that mainly, you know, this is an issue about Flash dealing with his family and his upbringing and how that all built up and formed the person who he is today. You know, the issue kind of focuses on Flash's relationship with his father and, you know, kind of recapping the fact that his father was abusive and alcoholic and how that, you know, affected him growing up and how that drove some of his anger issues and drove who he was. And then we come back in the story to see Flash today and dealing with his girlfriend, Betty, who they're a little bit on the rocks because he's hiding the fact that he's Venom and he's sneaking off and going to do these missions and she's getting frustrated because he's not around. You know, and so when he tries to, you know, pay, you know, say, okay, I'm going to get my life in order, I'm going to pay attention to my girlfriend, then his mother calls and says, you know, that his father's fell off the wagon and she doesn't know where he is and he's got to go find him. That scene, that conversation with his mother was one of the most realistic, well-written comic book personal phone conversations I've ever read. We only heard Flash's side of it. And as I'm reading it, I'm like, oh God, I've heard this conversation. And I was like, oh God, I think I might've had this conversation, you know, not specifically, but like, you know, that whole kind of, you know, where, you know, someone's dealing with a difficult family member or a difficult friend or a difficult, you know, point in their life. And that, you know, that tense moment where you're just like, you're just at your wit's end and you don't want to have to deal with it, but you know, because of your familial obligations, you have to. And just Remender just totally nailed that. And then, so Peter Parker helps his buddy out. And so Peter and Flash go out looking for his dad. They're hitting the local bars and they finally track him down at the police station where he's been picked up. And we see drunk Flash Thompson dad and they get into a tussle. And ultimately, Flash, you know, has the moment where he could, you know, punch his father back and get him back for all those things and get him back for calling him a cripple and all that sort of stuff. But he rises above and he doesn't. And it just was a real, you know, and then of course it ends with, you know, kind of him breaking down and crying in his girlfriend's arms. And then just sadly phone ringing and having to go off on a mission as Venom. And it was just such a great, powerful character piece. And, you know, dealing with social issues, dealing with, you know, the thing, you know, these are the things that make up our lives. And, you know, that's not new to comics, especially Marvel comics. We've been reading these stories and it's been, you know, people with drug problems or people, you know, like real things seep into these stories all the time. And it reminds us that, you know, that's why Marvel is kind of somewhat different than DC or the other kind of universes, because it has that realistic kind of angle. But this
really? Speedy wasn't on heroin?
Well, Speedy was on heroin. No, I know Speedy was on heroin. But
so that's an incorrect statement then.
That also doesn't exist.
Kyle Rayner got fucked up.
That does. No, DC has done its fair share of realistic kind of storylines, but generally, you know, Marvel is the more grounded kind of, you know.
Generally, that's incorrect statement.
That's Marvel's
PR.
I mean, and it just was really, really, really strong at the end of the day. Like, as I got through the rest of my stack, I was like, there's no way I can pick any other book other than this. You know, and more, you know, the combination of Remender focusing on the character and Fowler and Moore both being present on the book, doing their best, some of the best stuff from Fowler I've ever seen, like very non, I mean, he never appears in the costume in Fowler's section. It's all Flash stuff and it's all talking heads and it's all drama, but it's done. The storytelling is really, really strong.
It's cartooning is what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so I just really enjoyed it and just really wanted to, you know, kind of highlight it and make sure people are, if you have been curious about it or not sure about it, pick up this issue. This gives you a good idea of what Remender is doing with Venom. You know, the action sequence in the beginning was what you would expect from Tony Moore. It was, and it's going to have implications on the future of the Venom character, I believe. And then the personal storyline was just, you know, quality, you know, comic storytelling as it is.
But, you know, but at the same time, like, it's a good issue, and it definitely it shows sort of what it's capable of, but this was, I don't think this is really indicative of what the series has been so far. That is not a criticism, but if you're the kind of person who likes all sorts of action, there's more of it usually.
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean,
as much navel gazing, and I'm not really using that in a negative term.
Right. No, I mean, this is definitely higher on the drama side. I mean, admittedly, it was 6 pages of action, but that gives you a taste of what the action is like, I think. So.
Yeah, this is actually one of those things that if you read this and you liked it and you never went and read Fear Agent, then you need to.
Right.
Because a lot of these are the same kinds of things that themes and stuff that were coming up in Fear Agent, I thought that were handled well in there. It's not the same story exactly. It's not.
No,
it like
yeah,
that.
But you're right. I mean, thematically in terms of what makes, because I think Keith Houston is a much different character than Flash Thompson. You know, even though they have some similarities in terms of, you know, alcohol use or abuse or, you know, that sort of thing. I see what you mean by that. It definitely parallels the drama.
I just think that there's that familial tension which is present in both Fear Agent and this. And I think that if you look at the very last thing in this is the phone call that Flash gets, and he's just, yes sir, I understand.
Yep.
And there's a little tiny black panel, you know, I'll be right there. Like he's got all these things pulling at him.
Yep.
And you know, stuff he doesn't always want to have to deal with. And, you know, part of it, it's not necessarily just familial. That's most of it is.
It's a sense of duty.
Yes, it's his duty because he's a soldier.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed that. I thought
the parallel between sense of duty as a soldier and sense of duty as a son. I think those are I think they're very much similar themes in this particular case with Flash and within the story. So, yeah. But yeah, I just thought it was really, really strong and just really a lot of fun. And you know, it was just but it was just a really like, I put it down. I'm like, damn, that's a good single issue comic book. But I also said damn when I read Uncanny X-Force number 12 because I remember pulling out the stops on this book. And really this is like the pick of the week this week was a matter of inches, you know, between this book, Venom, Uncanny X-Force, Criminal, which we're going to talk in a little bit as well. All the books were really high quality. And Uncanny X-Force 12 continues on the Dark Angel saga where X-Force is in the Age of Apocalypse universe and Remender drops a whole new grouping of villains for us to see that are all kind of very, you know, in that Age of Apocalypse kind of imagination style of rethinking the characters. As a fan service, as a Marvel thing, I got all giddy when I was reading that. But not to mention a very steamy scene between Psylocke and Phantom X, which was awesome as well. So
the art's really hurting this book.
That was the only thing. That was the one thing that took it away from it. Yeah, I couldn't make it.
It used to be a really special book, and now it's just a very good book because the art is really bringing it down. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It is story-wise, it's fantastic, but
yeah.
It's certainly not the wow, you have to read this book that it used to be.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that, you know, we've said it before, said it again. You know, Dean White continues to be the glue that holds it together, and I'm not a big fan of Mark Brooks, and I don't even think that this is. You know, I don't think that some of Mark Brooks' best work or worst work. It's just it's Mark Brooks is what I would expect from it. But it's like counting the minutes until we can get O'Pena back. I think he comes back on 15.
Or anyone, Ribic. Yeah. Anyone before Brooks. It was before that. I mean, it's a fun story. And it's a long delay after getting it every 2 weeks.
Yeah, going back to monthly is like,
I think it was more than monthly. I think there was a delay on it.
Was there a delay on it? No, because it was biweekly all the way up until June, I thought, right?
Right, but then it's been, I think it was longer than 4 weeks, but not that much longer, but still, it's just weird.
I mean, that's why the art changes, because they double ship it, so.
Yeah. So in the grouping, in the villains grouping, we got White Cloak, which is just Cloak and Dagger, but he's white instead of black, which is funny. Grim Chamber, which is a mix between The Thing and Chamber. Iron Ghost, which is a mix of Ghost Rider and Iron Man. Zombie Sentry. just Blob.
Does he cry? Tears of Blood?
Just Blob, which I had to give credit for the Blob because he has a tattoo on his stomach that says good life, like thug life, and it's got the drawing of the pig, and the pig is dissected into the parts of the pig. and then there's Beta Red, which is a variation of Omega Red, and Orange Hulk, which I thought was fun. Like it was funny because because they're all plausible alternate dimension kind of versions of these characters, but you also know that there's a like Zombie Sentry and Orange Hulk, you know that's Remender poking fun, you know.
Yeah.
So Yeah, so this is a lot of, it was a lot of fun. I can't wait to see where, and then it ends with the big reveal that the Wolverine of the Age of Apocalypse has become Apocalypse or something. He's donned Apocalypse's armor. Yeah, so
And he killed his daughter.
Yeah.
Or no, he killed Wolverine. He killed the daughter.
Killed the daughter, yeah.
Yeah. Oops.
Yep. So
Criminal the Last of the Innocent number 2, I thought kept the high level the first issue kept. This was, as Ron said before, a really good week of books.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really good books, and this is one of them. In the last issue, we had Riley Richards from the city going back to his hometown, deciding to kill his wife. She's a harpy who's having an affair, and she's got a super powerful rich father. And in this issue, he decides he's going to do it, and he actually enacts the plan to kill his wife. We continue to get the really good flashbacks done in the Archie style that sort of poke fun at the whole Wortham thing, and also Archie itself, kind of, because the dynamics are there. And just fantastic work all around from this is, I think so far, this is the best criminal story.
This is, yeah, hands down. I mean, hands down, this is going to end up being the best criminal story. This is fantastic because it's like, it actually more so than the recent storylines, this reminds me of the first storyline.
Yep.
Not in terms of what's happening or whatever, but in terms of, like, we got one character, he's just a guy. You know, and he's plotting killing his wife to because he can't stand her, but he doesn't want to lose the money. He admits he likes being rich. Like, it was very honest, and it was very, you know, like, and very gritty. And I just love the layering of the Archie style flashback artwork, which is hysterical because it's like whenever you draw naughty things in that simple kind of style, it's funny. So it's a simple joke, but it's funny.
Yeah, but even the non-naughty stuff, like the whole one-page detention story, was actually like a nice full story.
That was that was actually really good. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Riley's gals.
but even that story, did you call her a slut? Yeah, slutty bitch. Which in that sort of smacks you in the face when you're in that style. But
man,
I love this character and the plot. And
man, do I hate that Riley fucking Richards.
And I keep forgetting it takes place in the 80s, but then I keep noticing his hair. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is the 80s.
Yeah.
He's got that 80s sort of not almost a mullet hair, but not quite.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. What, the friend's hair or Riley's hair? Oh, Riley. Yeah, I see. I just saw a panel with the back of his head. He does. He's got like the 80s Peter Parker hair.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He looks kind of like 80s Peter Parker.
He does, actually, yeah. No, but this is, it's great. I mean, it's really like, I kind of don't want it to ever end because it's so good, but I also want to see the story move along. And it ends with the cliffhanger where he's gonna stab his wife's eyes out with an ice pick. Yeah, I know. Oh God, crazy. But it's great. It's just so good. Josh, are you picking it up or?
Yeah. All right. I like it. Yeah. I don't think it's the greatest thing ever. I like the heist stories a lot more, just personally.
Oh, yeah?
But yeah, it's good.
All
right. Interesting. I'm assuming you like Detective Comics 880 a lot.
Creepiest page turn of the year, I think you could give to this one. I don't want to go into the shower anymore, ever.
This is the second to last issue of the run from Snyder and Jock and Francisco Francavilla. And in this issue, the Joker's escaped, and he's coming after Gordon's ex-wife. And Gordon does not get there in time.
Yeah, it's fairly grisly. It's one of those things that's nice because you got to see how the whole thing got set up from jump. Sort of what the story was, and you know, Scott was a prose writer before he did this, and you kind of see the way that he set up his big story. It reads more like a big book than a bunch of sort of single issues, which is a good thing for me. I like that. it was fun. I mean, I kind of at this point, like, it's what I expected, you know, but not in a bad way. Like, that sounds lame if I just say it's what I expected. But
Jock's Joker is really fucking terrifying and creepy.
Yeah, that. He's got some demons in his pen, is what I'm saying. the cover is spectacular. From the big sort of round open eyes, you know, with the bat symbol in them to the just scary. The entire thing is scary. Yes, very good issue. That's what I have to say about it.
And there's a big twist at the end where you find out, you know, sort of that gets you to the point of the next issue where, oh, shit, now it's going to get really...
Well, which they set up last time, which is sort of, you see the machinations of everything that's going on. I really liked the idea that basically the Joker didn't do it. And they sort of hammered it in over and over again. Because you have to realize what a big deal that is when there's evil shit going down and it is not the Joker.
Right.
That's never done. You know, and he's kind of proud. Like, he's proud of it.
And also the fact that he recognized right off the bat that it was Robin under the suit and not Bruce.
Yeah, I like that too. He's smart.
Yeah.
I like you know, there was like that line where Gordon said something like, you know, he knows. Like, how does he know? And it's like, he always knows. And I realized that one of the secrets of these kind of books is that you don't have to explain how he knows, because that would take too much time and it wouldn't matter. Yep. And the horror is in the fact that you don't know how he knows. He just always does. And that's the scary part. This is a horror story.
Does Gordon know?
What do you mean?
I get the feeling that Gordon knows who Batman is.
He must. I don't. That wasn't what I was talking about. But
no, I know. But I was using your phrase to ask a different question.
Yeah.
I feel like he does in this issue.
I guess he hasn't really acted like it though.
He talks.
I feel like most people seem to know.
You know what I mean? Where his wife's in the bed in Dick's private hospital, which was weird.
Yeah.
He sort of talks to Dick like he is Batman.
Yeah. Well, do you find that in comics generally they act like Jim knows who Bruce is?
The intimation in Dark Knight Returns, and I think some writers have played up the fact that he knows, but just sort of either willfully ignores it or just never brings it up.
I think you have to, otherwise Jim's an idiot.
Right.
I mean, it is. Like, he's too smart. It's just like the Joker. The Joker's too smart. He knows. He knows Batman better than anybody.
Yeah.
It's
plausible deniability to a certain degree.
Yeah.
You know, like, yes, he knows, but he can't officially know. You know?
I think Gordon knows and just never brings it up.
Yeah,
you know, it's sort of like, I know you. I know this thing, but it's, I just can't. I can't face it, or I can't deal with it. If I pretend to not deal with it, then it's not real, kind of thing. He's got to know, though. He's too good of a cop to not.
Yeah.
Hey, Bruce has all his sons. They keep showing up as new Robins.
Where does he get these wards?
Well, he adopts them now in the modern age. There's no war wards.
Yeah,
can you imagine the tabloid headlines? I mean, he'd be worse than Michael Jackson at this point.
Millionaire playboy gets a new ward.
Another
new Wayne boy.
New Wayne.
Who's Wayne's new boy?
He would be like every bad monologue ever.
Yep.
It'd all be about Bruce Wayne.
He's got another son there, see?
That was either one of the Frog Ad executives from Upstate Manhattan or like a drunk Jerry Seinfeld.
Either one. Take your pick.
I love the Frog Ad executives.
For people who don't want to stink.
Gil, Bill, and Lil.
Hello, Gil. Hello, Lil. Hello, Phil. 26-year-old movie.
I might be on a Captain America hype. My pick of the week is Captain America and Bucky number 620.
It was good. It was really good. It was
every Cap book I've ever wanted. I've wanted this book my whole life, a World War II era Cap and Bucky book, drawn by Chris Somney.
Somney and colored by Betty Breitweiser.
Yes.
Great team.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I was just like, this is, and I've heard the tale a lot of times that, I've read lots of Captain America in World War II. You know, I'm not sick of it at all yet. Not even close. And this is like, I don't think I've read Bucky's origin retold in a long time this well. You know, like, I can't complain in the way that it was done. What a showing from Somni and Breitweiser. Just
they almost put every other art team to shame.
Yeah,
the amount detail in every panel.
Well, it's funny because looking at it, like, you look at the cover, and honestly, it's not a very good cover. I mean, it's an Ed McGuinness cover that I don't really like the composition or the layout or anything like that. The logo is whatever. But then you open it and you get the title page and you get, okay, slightly better. Is that Butch Geist it looks like a Butch Geist. Okay, cool. Captain America, Bucky, that looks good. Then you turn the page, you start reading Somni, and Somni blows both of those guys away just completely. Oh, man, it's great.
So yeah, if you saw the movie, you haven't read a Cap book, this is basically Bucky's origin in World War II. So you can start here. This is the first issue, even though it's number 620, and go from there. I think this is a World War II book, correct? So this will be where it goes forward.
Yeah.
I like this version of the origin a lot more than the movie version. Like, yes. I think there's so much more to it that, because in the movie, Cap is the same age. In fact, he sort of looks up to Bucky.
Yep.
And so you don't get that paternal relationship that comes about in this story, which is so nice. There are a lot of punches in this book.
There's a lot of fighting in 1939.
If you just look through it, like the variance in panel composition on each page makes it so refreshing to read.
Yeah.
Just each page is sort of different than, or each panel is sort of different than the one before it. It's great storytelling, but like it's just exciting to look at. It's dynamic in that way.
And I mean, and the whole idea, I mean, we've heard stories in World War II of, you know, underage guys joining up and lying about their age and stuff like that. Like, I like that it taps in on that, and the fact that the Army knows that Bucky is, you know, not even 16 yet, and, you know, and yet they see the potential in him, and the pairing of, you know, of him to Captain America. I mean, I agree with you. I like this as an origin. And it goes back to, you know, some of the angles and stuff that Somni took with some of these panels were like the, yeah. There's a lot of from below or above, you know what I mean?
Like, oh, he gives Steve like that aura of mystery.
Yep.
You know, because he's always being looked at from Bucky's angle, which is way down, and yep. His face is kind of in shadow, and it's just a different perspective than we normally see him.
Yeah, and we only saw Captain America in this issue in the newsreel.
Yeah.
No.
Captain America.
Yeah. Well, Steve's in, you know, his uniform. I mean, he's not in costume. You know. So like, and when Bucky does meet Cap, you made a good point. I think there's only like two panels where he's in full light. Mm-hmm. Or everything else, there's a shadow on his face or you know, like he's, you know, just that Somni playing with the shadows type thing. Yeah, it was great. Cool. Well, congratulations, Connor. I'm glad you got the Captain America book you've always wanted.
Yes, I did. I'm pretty happy about it.
So
it is very good.
So I've heard nothing but good things about the cape from Joe Hill and IDW, that one shot that got nominated for an Eisner and stuff like that. Now, I haven't read that yet, but on a lark, I decided to pick up the first issue of this miniseries that came out this Wednesday. Did you guys pick it up or check it out? Or
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What did you think?
I had read the thing before, and I liked it. It was I felt like a little sort of story I'd read before. You know, well done, definitely.
Yeah.
About a guy who's basically just sort of a loser, and he's an asshole, and he, you know, sits around, doesn't do anything with his life, has a good girlfriend, treats her like shit, she dumps him, and he gets superpowers, and then he goes and drops her from very far up.
Yeah.
Because he's just worthless. I mean, like,
oh, because he didn't know what he's doing and screwed up. Yeah,
here's the thing.
Yeah,
I know where the writer was from, and I know a lot of people like this.
Yeah,
it's like that is a New England stereotype that I've met a lot of, and so that guy was instantly very, very real to me.
Right.
So I liked that a lot. But he's an awful person, and so it's like it's not like a fun thing to read, but yeah. It's really well done. What was interesting is that he didn't. Joe Hill didn't script this one.
No, he didn't. He was a creative consultant.
Couldn't tell you the difference though. Like it was still the voice was spot on.
Yeah.
Really strange scene with a bear.
Yes.
That was much more imaginative than it needed to be in a very good way.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have just done one thing. We know dude went and got a bear, dropped it on the cops' cars, and like it wasn't like that's over now.
Yeah.
It was still some mauling to be done.
Yeah.
And he's like, hold still, you fat shit. You know, yelling at the bear. I was like, oh, that is Maine White Trash right there. That's great.
Yeah, it was very much like, because I hadn't read the first one shot. It's on my list of things to read. So I picked it up. Someone told me the story, so I knew what the premise was, but I didn't know how much of a jerk this guy was. And then
it's not like Ant-Man. It's not that.
No.
It's not a cat.
No, it's a believable jerk. That's the thing. Yeah. That's a scary thing. Like, you know this guy. Yeah.
It's low life.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was good. I really enjoyed Zach Howard's art on it as well.
Oh, totally. It's perfect for it. It's very nice. It's a good book.
Yeah, good book. So it's a nice little miniseries if you're looking for some, you know, it's another one of those modern takes on, you know, superhero-dom. You know what I mean? Like, normal guy gets powers. What does he do with them? But in a bit of a darker kind of turn. I did like the moment he says, fuck it, and puts on the cape. And, like, it's still drawn in a glamorous, like, mm-hmm. I'm superhero-y kind of thing, but he's doing something awful with it. You know,
I like that it's a short cape. It's from his youth.
Yeah, it's a blanket, really. It's like
looks like one of the Wonder Twins.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, but it was good. It was enjoyable. So cool. So so I want to remind everybody to check out Graphically. iFanboy is a member of the Graphically family, and Graphically's got digital comics for you. Over 3,500 comics. From Marvel, Top Cow, Boom, IDW, tons of other great publishers, and including Graphically has Cowboys and Aliens. The movie came out this weekend. If you're curious about the comic that inspired the movie, head over to Graphically. You can read Cowboys and Aliens, as well as there's a whole bunch of extras associated with the comic. There's the movie trailers and their character bios and sketches and character designs and things like that. It's a really – you get a lot of bang for your buck when you pick up Cowboys and Aliens on Graphically. And if you have a Nook Color from Barnes & Noble, you can get it there as well. And there's a bunch of other cool other extras that are associated with the Nook as well. But if you don't have a Nook, you can pick up Graphically on the web at graphically.com or on your Android device, phone or tablet, or the iPhone or the iPad, and all the comics are there, all there for your enjoyment. Be sure to follow Graphically on Twitter.com/graphically and on Facebook at facebook.com/graphically, and go to graphically.com for all your digital comics needs.
All right.
So X-Men Schism number 2. They double shipped this month. First issue came out 2 weeks ago. This continued the momentum of the Jason Aaron's X-Men event. And while I loved what happened in the issue and I loved the story stuff, Frank Cho fell a little short for me.
You know, he took the slim moniker to heart with this one.
Really like just drew him to be look like a wuss. Which pissed me
Cyclops,
off.
Cyclops, yeah. He looked kind of like a nerdlinger.
He was the 80-pound weakling.
The problem with this issue was that with Cho's art, at least, was that there are some points where it's like, yes, that's Frank Cho. Like when he drew the Fifth Element aliens, like that, those look great. That was like it was, you know, imaginative. It was really cool. You know, there was a couple of, you know, the robots, the Sentinels look great. Actually, kind of liked his Wolverine. You know, like he does that really detailed face kind of stuff. But as soon as I saw Cyclops, as soon as I saw Quentin Quire, I was like, oh, just, and then there were some panels and there were some face, like it just looked like he just was like rushing through it or took the lazy way out, you know, like quickly sketched a face, and it just didn't match the face, you know, in the panel before it or after it. Like there's one when Cyclops is arguing with Wolverine early on, there's one look that Wolverine gives that is just way overly cartoony than the look of Wolverine below it. So that was my only frustration with it. But that said, I love the moment when the X-Men roll – when Cyclops sends the delegation to the museum opening and Wolverine's reaction that's a show of force and it's like Magneto. You know, basically, Cyclops wants to show that the X-Men are there and public and present. And so you got Magneto and Colossus and Namor and Iceman and Emma Frost and, you know, kind of very 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 akin to when they first moved to San Francisco, that same scene. And then the ending with the Hellfire Club masks coming back, which is great. I mean, again, it's dipping into the X-Men past and doing it in a way that's, you know, now and modern, in a way that's not too, like, you know, swimming in retro-ness. So, yeah, I mean, it was great. Just the art fell short for me. So.
There were pages of art that were very good, though. Like the page where the little girl rips the alien apart. I was like, that's a good comic book page.
Yeah. That's it. But then you get to another page, like, ugh.
He's quite slim. He looks like Christian Bale in The Machinist.
Ugh. So, I don't know. I forget who's the next artist. I think it might be Acuna next.
You think so?
Yeah, and then 4 is, I think, Alan Davis, which I can't wait for. Oh, yeah, next issue looks like it's Acuna. So.
You know what's going to happen is amongst these issues, none of them will ever look the same.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's the problem.
Because they're going to go back to the 70s with Alan Davis.
Yeah.
We'll early see. 80s, feathered hair, big shoulder pads.
All right. It's okay. It's he gets a pass always.
So. That's a nice head of hair on you. Fables number 107. This one was drawn by Terry Moore. I let Ron know. I was curious if you would pick it up, if that would be enough to push you over. I'm guessing not.
No. I flipped through it at the store. It looked nice.
I didn't think it actually looked that good. Okay. I don't know, something about it. I don't know. I was expecting more. It was a lot of like profile shots and like I don't know. It didn't. I don't know if it took advantage of Terry Moore as much as I would have wanted it to. Just looked a little raw. I'm not sure what that's about. I also didn't really love the story all that much either. So there was that.
There you go.
So this is not a huge recommendation, is what I'm saying.
So what you're saying is don't run out and buy it.
Like it might be interesting, I guess, at the end. It's kind of an interesting concept, but I didn't love it. Like it, I don't know. It was right between like serious and funny, and I don't think it towed the line very well, which it usually does. You know, it's not like I'm going to drop the book.
Are you going to drop it?
No, I said it's not like a...
Oh, so did I. I was like, wow.
You're all hitched up on one of the words. I'm going to drop it.
No.
Well, that's a ringing endorsement from Josh. I'll give a ringing endorsement to this week's DC Retroactive books, Green Lantern and Justice League, which were fan-fucking-tastic.
How awesome were they? How great were... I love these Retroactive books. I love them.
I really... This is a genius move. I was weary of these books, but these books are fan... fantastic, especially the Justice League book. Green Lantern was good, but
Green Lantern was good because it was written by Danny O'Neill with art by Mike Grell, and it was Mike Grell doing a mix of his style and also trying to ape a little bit of the Neil Adams, you know, kind of. And Mike Grell came out of that Neil Adams run, so it's not too much of a leap. But it was
nice to see him draw on Green Arrow again. He was the guy behind that Green Arrow, not Vertigo book that was in the 80s before Vertigo existed, which would have been a Vertigo book.
Would you love that? You love that run. That's the one with the hood.
Great runs
with the hood, right?
Everybody loves that run. Yeah.
No, but I remember Connor especially saying he liked liked it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Green Lantern was good, but the Justice League, written by Kary Bates.
Oh, so good.
It was great.
This tied into a specific issue of Justice League. If you've read the old books or if you listen to Tom versus Justice League, you'll know that there was Earth on Earth Prime exists us, and occasionally the Flash would end up on Earth Prime and hang out with the DC creators who drew his comics. And in this issue, errant Zeta Beam shoots Adam's Adam into Earth Prime, where they think he's crazy because he thinks he's a superhero, and so. The Justice League has to rescue him in Earth Prime. They have to go to get Jewel Schwartz's help because he knows Barry Allen from his many trips to the Earth Prime. It was insane.
It was great. Awesome. My favorite moment was when they're on Earth Prime and Barry realizes, he goes, the world's most foremost authority on Adam Strange happens to live right here on Earth Prime. And then they go to Rockefeller Plaza in New York City and they go meet Julie Schwartz. Oh, it was great.
Then Julie Schwartz has to convince Adam Strange that he's actually a super. He's actually from, you know, the comics from another Earth.
Oh, and what was the moment when they're trying to figure out how they're going to do it? And Julie Schwartz goes to the Flash. It's like, well, you can run up to the Catskills and get a cabin, which is what happened in the Flash.
Yes.
Oh, it was great.
You had me at errant Zeta Beam. So
the only weird thing was whoever colored Barry's hair as Wally.
Yeah. Yep.
Which was weird, but
red.
And what an editor does. So, and then there's a backup story, which was one of the old Justice Leagues where Kary Bates was a villain when he went crazy.
Yep.
And fought them as a villain with a goatee and 70s hair. It was awesome.
It's great. It's really good.
The value of the week. This was the best value for your buck.
My only complaint about the Justice League one versus the Green Lantern one was the Green Lantern one had Mike Grell on art. And whereas the art on Justice League America was guys now trying to ape that style, but with a modern color, you know what I mean? So like, I
style's pretty old.
Yeah, no, I know. But the thing was that I could tell that this was done now. Whereas if you handed me this Green Lantern and told me that this was an issue from the 70s, I would have believed it.
You know, they should have colored these in the old style too. Yep, I think now agreed. That I think about it. That's the problem with the 70s. As they get further on, if you look in the solicits, it's actually the creative teams from they're actually still alive and able to work. Whereas these guys probably not. But.
Yeah.
So. God, this was fantastic.
What are you paying? $15 a page now? What is that?
So much fun.
They got Kary Bates for his old page rate. Yeah. Yeah. $15 a page now,
yeah.
Kary.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a raise.
And they doubled it. He'll give you 50.
I mean, there was nothing that was not fun about the Justice League issue.
Yeah.
Now, you may remember back a couple of conventions ago. I couldn't tell you which one anymore. There was a shot of Invincible. And he was a black man.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yep.
I think we are seeing the first step.
Black?
Because it's a funny joke about social context.
No, that was WonderCon.
Yep.
Okay.
And that, it said 2012 underneath it, right?
Invincible 81 appears to be the first step towards that change. Because at the end of this one, you get the impression that that Mark is not so into it anymore after coming back from space.
He hasn't been into it. I mean, I haven't read the last trade. It's been sitting on my shelf, which is the war. But even before that, he's always wanted to stop.
He's been a little mopey.
Yeah.
His girlfriend's all fat now, and...
Ugh, the worst.
No, but it was like one of those in-between issues, but I thought it was a nice...
Is the new Invincible going to hang out with the new Spider-Man?
Probably.
Knowing those two creators, I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but it was good. Great. I saw you guys, we highlighted in the best of the covers on the site, and it was a great cover. Great, great cover. Yep. Yeah.
Did anyone else read Secret Avengers 15?
I did.
Someone must have.
Was it a little weird?
Well, here's the thing I thought about. It was a little weird. I actually enjoyed it. I did not, I didn't have the same violent reaction I had to Secret Avengers 13. Unfortunately, like as a story on its own, it was good.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it doesn't matter, and that's the problem with this title.
It told some. I mean, the whole thing is that there's a website out there that says Cap's not really dead, Bucky Cap. You know, because it's in the midst of the war, and they posted there. This is a sort of Gawker-like website that says Cap's not really dead. We have proof, and so Natasha shows up at their office, either looking for the proof or looking to kick some ass, and.
Yeah,
it's basically an entire issue of her talking with the editors of the website
about whether or not they should run things or not. Like it was very, you know, but that thing it wasn't poorly written.
There were some interesting points brought up, like you guys never die, so why do you get upset?
Yep.
He's just going to be back.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, it's not, you know, but then she says, well, do you think it doesn't hurt to die even if we do come back?
And, yeah, which you know. there was some interesting discussion around the deaths and being a hero and living in this universe and all that sort of stuff. I thought it was really cool that they pointed out, they showed Hawkeye, they showed Daredevil, they showed Adam Warlock, they showed Colossus. You know, like it was spanning across the, you know, the entire Marvel universe. But ultimately, where this fits in Fear Itself, or when Black Widow has the time to go off and go do this, or how this fits in, like Secret Avengers, I've said from the get-go, has been aimless. Secret Avengers as a title has been like, it started off, it had potential, it was cool, it was a different team, all stuff like that. And I think that it's just been editorially a fumble from the get-go.
Well, we start an even newer direction next month.
Yeah.
So there
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
With Steve's covert action team, Whitmer, Warren Ellis.
Yeah.
Is the next issue drawn by McKelvey?
It is, yeah.
Well, here's my question about that, because you see the cover on the last page. Do we get some sort of clarity on the whole Steve situation? Because he shows up here and in Schism in his... in his Captain
yep.
Steve uniform,
yeah,
and he's in next week's cover. I mean, next week's cover and Schism is Captain Steve uniform, and yet he's running around as Cap now.
I don't know. It's one of those weird event time moments where he hasn't put the costume on yet, you know, that sort of thing. So,
listen, at this point, does Fear Itself even count?
No.
Nope. Yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem. So,
nope.
No, it's not a problem. It's just fine. I don't have to read it. Cobra number 3. I caught up. I'd fallen behind on these Cobra books, and this is by the original sort of Mike Costa and Antonio Fuso. I think that's the right first name.
Yep.
It's basically, I don't remember which one it is, Tomax or Zaymot, whichever one isn't dead.
One's dead. I don't remember who.
They're you know, it's hard. One's got a scar. I don't know.
How will they finish their sentences now?
Exactly. They won't know how to.
He'll just be walking around saying half sentences.
Yes, I'd like one. Excuse me, sir?
I'm sorry. I've never had to do this before. I've never had to finish a whole sentence.
Anyway, they put him in prison. It's a really interesting story about how he uses his connections and power and all these things to sort of break out of the prison. And it's not sort of what you expect, and I really like that. The issues so far have all been a look at each of the people who is sort of vying to be the new Cobra Commander, and they all start with, like, I can never be Cobra Commander. And I really like it. It's been pretty good. And it's, you know, all the stuff that was good about G.I. Joe Cobra, but without that newness, I guess, to it. That would be the thing.
Yeah, this series is good. It's definitely the best of all the series
sure.
that are out. And it's the same team, and they were good before. But I just wonder if the whole thrill is gone.
Magic gone? I mean, when did the first thing happen? It was like years ago, wasn't it now?
It's been a long time.
It's not so much that. It's just that they all, in anticipation of this relaunch, they sort of ended their stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we're starting again. It's like, well, you just could have ended everything. And now we're back, in, you know, the same characters, the same creative teams. And I don't know. I like this book particularly, but I don't look forward to them as much as I did before.
Yeah. I like the Serpentor issue a lot, too.
Yeah. Serpentor.
It's like, come on!
He doesn't do that. I gotta say, they really reinvent the Serpentor in a way that doesn't make him completely douchey.
Yeah, right. Well, you could say this, I command once.
I wouldn't say he was douchey.
Once.
He was not. I would never describe Serpentor as douchey.
He had a pretty doofy outfit.
Yeah, well, doofy, I'll say. Ridiculous, perhaps. Right,
no, ridiculous. Okay, that's
yeah,
fine. But like, okay, I probably shouldn't have said douchey. But
that's the a point different connotation.
Serpentor.
Wore a white belt?
He popped his collar?
Yeah.
Actually. Didn't his cape have a big collar on it?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a Serpentor in the marina.
He's L. Ron Hubbard as a snake man.
Yeah, basically.
When that is less ridiculous than the genetic combination of Genghis Khan.
Hitler. Caesar.
Is Hitler one of them?
No.
I think so.
They wouldn't have put Hitler on the...
They would have. It was the 80s. Show. You never know.
One of them had an underwater tomb, which doesn't make any damn sense to me either.
It was Aquaman.
He was one part Aquaman.
We're going to find out here. Here we go. So, where is he?
Serpentor.
In the cartoon. Serpentor first appeared in the 5-part episodes Arise, Serpentor Arise. Okay, so cloning research by Dr. Mindbender from the DNA extracted from the unearthed remains of Julius Caesar, Napoleon Bonaparte, Attila the Hun, Philip II of Macedon, and his son Alexander the Great, Ivan the Terrible, Vlad the Impaler, Hannibal, Genghis Khan, and Rasputin.
Nice.
I love Wikipedia. In the animated continuity, Sun Tzu's DNA was also intended, but the attempt to get his DNA was thwarted by Sergeant Slaughter. whose DNA was then used as a substitute. I forgot about that. So Sir Fredro has a little bit of Sergeant Slaughter.
In the cartoon.
In the cartoon, right.
He also the comics are where it was at. Remember that? Remember when he sat around the fire telling the Judd Knox how he invented pizza? He was in Rome and he invented pizza sitting around the fire. They had some bread and some tomatoes and some cheese and they cooked it.
God, that's great.
Whenever the show ends up talking about the G.I. Joe animated series, only good can come of it.
So in the comic, it wasn't Sergeant Slaughter's DNA. It was Storm Shadow's that was used to create him.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And they didn't get – and Sun Tzu, lack of DNA made him unstable.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't add that, that's everything. It's like tomato paste.
I love it. So a later episode reveals that Serpentor can assume the facial features of those whose DNA is included in his genetic composition.
What?
In addition, a few more donors in his creation are revealed, a Viking warrior known as Ulik the Batterer and reptilian king Takasha from Indian mythology. Oh, man. They don't do that anymore. Seriously, it's great.
That may have been the writing staff going too far.
Yeah.
What about the Batterer? Let's put him in there. That's a good idea, Bill.
Could you imagine if they put Hitler?
There's no way. You can do all of you put Vlad the Impaler, but
Rasputin is the closest they could get. That was at least.
Genghis Khan is Ivan the Terrible.
Well, no, but the thing was that Genghis Khan, Ivan the Terrible, those were all hundreds of years ago.
Right.
Whereas Rasputin at least was still in the 1900s.
Yeah.
Like that was just what 60 years before the cartoon came out. There's some people who might have known Rasputin still alive at that point. and the only reason why you can do Rasputin and not Stalin is because Rasputin was just crazy and magic.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and as opposed to genocidal.
That's the key.
Yeah.
Anybody who committed a modern genocide, you can't do.
You really just can't do it.
like whoever was the head of the Tutsis, you can't do him.
Yeah. Jesus. Anyway, so those are the books that came out this week. We enjoyed them.
I'm guessing in 1984, the guy who knew Rasputin wasn't watching G.I. Joe.
Maybe he wasn't an old folks home and it was on the TV.
Yeah.
And he was like, this is ridiculous. but for way different reasons than everybody else. Rasputin wasn't anything like that. Gregory used to love to sing.
Oh, God.
He hated pizza.
Go to ifanboy.com/comics. All the comics are listed there. You can do your pull list. You can come back and rate your books and review them and make your pick of the week. And Connor, why don't you run down this week's top five pick of the weeks?
What about Idi Amin's DNA?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you can't do it.
You can't.
Writer's pitching that. Like, nah.
What about the Cambodian guy? He was probably still alive, though, at that point.
Pol Pot.
Yeah.
No, you can't do Pol Pot. You can't do the Taylor guy.
Oh, God.
You can't do Osama bin Laden.
Oh, man.
You can't do Mugabe. Ceausescu.
Jesus Christ.
Oof. All right. Fair enough.
But that list.
All right. The user reviews. Top five picks of the week from made by you, the users. You go to ifanboy.com, the comics page. You make your pull list. You can rate and review your books, and you can pick your pick of the week, and this is what you said. Number five, Uncanny X-Force number 12 was 2% of the pick of the week. Number four was Venom number 5 at 5% of the pick of the week, which was the iFanboy pick of the week. Number 3 was Captain America and Bucky, number 620 with 7%. 2 was Criminal, The Last of the Innocent, number 2 with 11%. And number 1, by a very authoritative margin, Detective Comics 880 with 64% of the pick of the week.
Those are all good books, though.
They're all great books, yeah. But impressive
good
show.
Week.
Yeah, very good week.
And a lot of books, but good ones.
And these percentages were at the time of recording, so if you come to ifanboy.com, they might be slightly different. But so on to the user reviews. Our first review comes from Judgmental Steve, who reviewed we've been getting some good usernames on the site. Who reviewed,
he's actually a fifth of a percent of Serpentor. Judgmental Steve.
Those pants do not work on you. Steve does all the time.
So Judgmental Steve reviewed Secret Warriors number 28, and he gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art 4 out of 5. Judgmental Steve says, Secret Warriors has been a fascinating series to follow. It's deeply rooted in continuity, making it a challenge for even Marvel Comics veterans, and the espionage story was difficult to follow from month to month between all the plot twists and backstories and betrayals. However, for those of us who stuck with it, it was an awesome ride from start to finish. With issue 28, that finish has come. The story of Nick Fury and his caterpillars is complete, and the future of these characters is laid out before us. At the end of it, Jonathan Hickman hammers in the most important point of the series. Nick Fury is the man, and Marvel Universe is lucky to have him protecting the free world for the past 50 years. Hickman's work is a spot-on conclusion to a great series, and Alessandro Vitti's art has not only improved since he began drawing way back in issue 7. If you're looking for a series with great espionage, artwork, and storytelling, then I highly recommend you pick this series up.
The pick-a-leak percentage was 0.9.
So there you go. Close enough. And this was the last issue of Secret Warriors. That series comes to an end, and I dropped it after the first couple issues because I didn't like the art, but I'm definitely probably going to pick it up either digitally or in trade paperback.
I made it longer than you. I think I made it a year, but I just didn't care about anyone but Nick Fury in the book. I didn't care about any of his caterpillars, I guess they're calling them, or any of those people. Hickman writes a great Nick Fury, and that was always the best part of the book. But the other characters I literally could not have cared less about, so... Yeah. I dropped it, but I also might go back and look at it too, because I hear nothing but good things about it.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things, and I want to know the implication it has into the continuity and the greater story. So,
All right. Keith7198 reviewed Flashpoint, Hal Jordan, number 2, and gave the story a 2 out of 5, and the art a 2 out of 5. And at the time of recording, nobody made this a pick of the week. And Keith says, many of the Flashpoint tie-in books have been fun, exciting, and add to the scope of the Flashpoint event. Then you have those that are dull, silly, and basically pointless. Without a doubt, Flashpoint, Hal Jordan falls in the second category. Issue 1 offered very little in terms of Flashpoint relevance, but had just enough question in it and its ending to bait me in for issue 2. But after reading the second book, the story feels even less important and has nothing to make me care about what takes place. Adam Schlagman's writing is subpar at best, and his story is hodgepodge of disjointed plot lines, poorly written dialogue, and Cliff Richard's art shines on a few pages but looks rushed and almost unfinished on others. Most panels lack any attention to detail, and the washed-out colors don't help. It's not a terribly ugly book, but there's nothing that stands out as a good work. In truth, the art looks just as uninteresting as the story.
I didn't pick this one up. This wasn't one that made the cut for me. So,
are you sure this wasn't Judgmental Steve's review?
It was pretty much what Keith said. Yeah. This was not a great week for Flashpoint books. There was one that was good, but the rest weren't. This was not very good.
Yeah,
the art was vacillating between trying to draw the characters like Ryan Reynolds and the other characters, and then other times it didn't look anything like them, and it was just a mess.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Too bad. All right then.
That's the user review. So godfm.com. You can make your pull list, write user review. If it's good, it'll get on the show. And thank you. And if you like this show, you listen to this show, you listen to our Don't Miss show, you listen to our watch our video shows, all the content we do for you, you might find yourself wondering, how can you help support these guys who help provide me with all this free entertainment, hours of it? How can I help them out? They make my comic book experience better. Well, the one thing you can do is go to godfm.com and click on the banners. For instance, there's a banner for WeLoveFine.com. They do Mighty Fine t-shirts, and if you look on the banner, you see there's a code for iFanboy users. You get 10% off your order. So these aren't just Google banners we're throwing up there. These are specific banners for iFanboy.
Yep.
Go and click on them. So if you want a t-shirt from Mighty Fine and you want 10% off, click on the banner. There's a code for it, iFanboy11, and there you go. That
some
helps
good
us
t-shirts.
Out.
Yeah, yeah. Really, they've some great Marvel. They've got the Marvel license. They're the ones doing all those like Saul Bass kind of inspired X-Men shirts.
Yes, they look cool.
Yeah, really good stuff. And so take advantage of this 10% off. Code iFanboy11. Go to WeLoveFine.com. Click on the banner. Go help. Do it.
iFanboy.com/Amazon, where you can go to the Amazon store, and you can anything you buy through Amazon, you get a little tiny piece of it at no extra cost to you, just as a cost to Amazon. And stick it to the man.
Yeah.
That's why.
Take away from their order and give it to us. I do all my purchasing through there too, so I help myself.
All of it, literally. Groceries, fuel.
I'm waiting on my groceries.
Fuel.
And finally, what am I fueling?
Fuel.
I'm fueling my tank where I'm building
ice
from Idi Amin and Papadoc. Right, be
building
a member
supplies.
At /store, $4 a month, $42 a year, $10 a month, $100 a year, get you a prize pack. We just sent out all the prize packs that were ordered before San Diego. So if you did that, you haven't gotten it yet. It's on the way. Anyone who's been a member since San Diego will have to wait a little while as we recover. But do that. We really appreciate it. You get a nice little prize pack in our eternal gratitude.
Yep. And you can do that at ifanboy.com/store where you can sign up for a membership there. Cool. All right. On to the emails. We got one email this week. It's from Neeks, who says, hey, I got a question for you guys. What's the deal on Doctor Strange exactly? He's always been a character I've never really known much about, but seems interesting to me. Just curious if there's any run of issues or book volumes that are worth reading on this character, or if any of you guys are a fan of his or even know much about him, since it seems that he's never mentioned while comics are being discussed. And I feel like this is like the minor league equivalent of where should I start in Green Lantern. I feel like this question comes up like once a year, doesn't it?
With Doctor Strange?
Yeah,
with
Doctor Strange.
Every
now and then someone asks about him.
That's because he's been in Bendis' Avengers a lot, and he had a great Brian K. Vaughan, Marcos Martin miniseries. But he doesn't really sustain a book on his own in the modern age. The '70s Doctor Strange is the one that everybody points to. I haven't admittedly not read it.
Yeah, no, you want to go. You want to go back and read the late '60s, early '70s Doctor Strange stuff, and it's. I think it's available in Marvel Essentials as well. It's collected in trades and things like that. That stuff was trippy and crazy and
Ditko.
Ditko. Oh, amazing. And like you said, it was Doctor Strange: The Oath by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcus Martin, which was fantastic. And that's really the best modern Doctor Strange story. But the problem is, for some reason, he's the eternal B-lister. You know, like he pops up in the Defenders. Now he's popping up in the Avengers. He pops up when they need a magic storyline, something like that. But cannot sustain an ongoing series for some reason.
That one that Mark Waid did a little while back. That was
oh yeah, that
mini,
was a
right?
couple years ago. That was just the mini. When he went to the baseball game.
The thing right now is that. He, you know, for a long time he was the Sorcerer Supreme, yeah. And now he's not that. It looks like he's going to be soon. Is that? Am I seeing that correctly? I don't know.
Possibly.
But some of those Marvel teasers make it look like maybe that'll.
Well,
happen.
He's going to come. He's going to come back. He's going to be in the Defenders series, the new Defenders that they announced in San Diego. So you'll get some more of him there. And that's the other thing too. If you want some Doctor Strange, pick up the old Defenders. The old Defenders comics are great, and he's very prominent in those.
Well, he's been in New Avengers for years now. So.
Yeah. Cool.
So some characters don't sustain a book.
Yeah. That's the thing.
He's
a great character. I mean, it's surgeon who loses the ability to use his hands, so learns the magic and learns the cult. I mean, we all know his story, you know, by the Eye of Agamotto and the hoary hordes of Hoggoth and Wong and the Greenwich Village studio and all that. So, I mean, like, we know, I know a lot about Dr. Strange.
123A Bleecker Street.
I know a surprising amount about Dr. Strange, actually. So, too bad. But anyway, so if you have any questions about characters, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. All right, our next question's got a question. Our next voicemail, our only voicemail, has got a question about logistics.
Hey, guys. This is Dave in Washington, D.C. Watching the Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes Season 8, Episode 1 with Nick Fury in it, and he was battling in a flying car, and he got kicked off the flying car. And he had, like, some wing kind of things that looked like banshees from the X-Men. And he just flew down from, you know, to the ground, like, totally safely. And my question is, how did he do this? And can I do the same thing? Because it seems like you can just fly if you have the right costume. So let me know, guys. I'm going to start working on my outfit. Thanks.
You know, in Transformers, they did that. They had those suits with the wings on them.
Did they?
Yeah, remember when they jumped out of the thing at the end?
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah.
So I guess that's real.
It's fun. I mean, I think
don't know.
I think we should remind him that it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My question is, where's the car go?
That's a very good question.
It's not like it just stops.
We never get questions that like I was watching Ben 10 and it's always this, like this we can speak to. Yeah. Oh, well that. Yeah.
All right, so keep us posted on your progress of building your suit. We look forward to that. And
it's called gliding. They have those suits. You can glide.
They do. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, I've seen people who like parachute. Like the thing at the end of the Transformers movie, that's a legitimate like skydiving thing where like they. I always feel like they put their arms close to their sides and then do something and then all of a sudden they've got the wings. Like,
but if you're falling though, like it doesn't work when you're close to the ground. It's not maneuverable.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's not like you can land with that. You need a secondary device.
Yeah, don't jump off your roof and do that. You need to get really jump out of a plane.
If you do,
No.
Videotape it.
No.
Because otherwise it's not worth it.
No, we're not liable for any of this stuff. Okay.
I'm telling you not to jump.
So you can call our voicemail line.
Do it.
Call our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
The Don't Miss podcast is a show that we do usually. It didn't happen last week, but there was a lot going on is what I'm saying.
Comic-Con last week.
Yeah.
That's true.
Nothing happens during Comic-Con.
Nothing, except for everything. We will talk with the creator about a book they have coming up the Wednesday after the show comes out. The show comes out every Monday. This week I'm talking to Jeremy Barlow of Dark Horse's Cult Number 1. It's a miniseries, and I shit you not, it is based on an obscure Swedish horror role-playing game.
Oh, really?
He said role-playing game, and I immediately thought video game. It's not. No, it's tabletop gaming.
Awesome.
Cool. Like, that's some weird licensing.
It's old school.
Right? Yeah, but it's a horror book, and you can hear all about it on Monday.
Excellent.
And if you are looking for our Captain America podcast, we finally did it, and it's on the feed behind this one. We put it out in the middle of the week. We San Diego delayed our viewing of it. So if you wanted to hear what we thought about Captain America the First Avenger, look for it either on the feed behind this or on ifanboy.com. You can stream it there or wherever you find our podcast. You can find that. And this week, this weekend, Cowboys and Aliens came out. We're going to do a show about that, just not yet. Because we just did a Captain America show.
Yeah, so expect that later this week.
Why put movies out around San Diego?
Oh, it's so painful. It's not fair.
Don't they realize we have a schedule to keep?
Yeah. So head over to ifanboy.com where you can go check out the Captain America podcast, the Don't Miss podcast. You can read my Pick of the Week review on ifanboy.com, as well as all the great news and discussion and all the great stuff on ifanboy.com. You can see all the stuff from San Diego that you might have missed and the wrap-ups that came up this past week. And then we've got more great stuff. Check out for Paul's Cowboys and Aliens review that's up on ifanboy.com. And basically, it's the place you want to be if you're into this shit. So
Sorry. I think it was in Major League 2 or something like that. The coach like was in a hospital bed and then like he's watching the game on TV and he stands up and he goes, "I love this shit." Yeah. Always killed me for some reason. That's what that made me think of, yeah. Sort of in spirit. So anyway.
Go to twitter.com/ifanboy and follow us there. Go to facebook.com/ifanboy. And we do a video show every Wednesday comes out. And this past Wednesday, it was our monthly check-in with Robert Kirkman, where we talked to Robert Kirkman at San Diego Comic-Con. Always a blast, always fun. Hopefully it just makes you laugh. That's the point.
It for San Diego coverage, right?
Yeah, we didn't talk to anybody else.
We shot nothing else?
Yeah, exactly. No, we talked to a shit ton of people. And so tune in this Wednesday for the first episode of our coverage from San Diego.
You swear a lot, dude.
Fuck yeah. Sorry. I'm sorry if your kids listening.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 with any questions you have. If you're going to leave a voicemail, keep in mind that if it's too long, we can't play it on the show. But say who you are and where you're from, and you may get a profanity-laden response from Ron.
Possibly. No promises.
Cockfucker, bitch.
Whore.
Whoa. And if you like the show, this show, the Don't Miss show, the video show, please leave a review on iTunes. It helps people find the show. We're looking for stuff to listen to or watch. It really helps us out. So if you can leave a review, it doesn't have to be long. You have to write an essay. Just leave a quick review. And if we thank you. And tell your friends, tell your comic book store people. Tell the people at the convention which you were just at. Maybe you'll listen to this in the future.
Tell the creators that you meet at the conventions to listen to the podcast.
Or that you heard about their book on our podcast.
Yeah, that's nice. Okay, so until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
You don't have to celebrate it, Frank. I'm Josh. Hello, my name is David. Your name is Veronica. Let's be together. Let's fall in love. Hello, my name is David. Your name is Veronica. Let's be together. Till the stars go out. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/ifanboy.